You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Doctor, if I really, really would, but the feeling in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give the information, asking for the word blood makes noise. Is it ringing in my ear? Blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Well, here we are in hour number three. We actually made it. Our thanks to Joshua Coy, whose show will soon be appearing here on the Global Star Radio Network, much to the chagrin of the listeners of WYDE FM in Birmingham, Alabama. Our thanks to Ronnie McMullen. And Ronnie, listen to me, my friend. You need to get back on the air, have your own show again. You're just too good not to be doing that. But thanks for Ronnie to join us talking about the nature of fear and how to overcome it. And again to our old friend Bob Griswold from ReadyMadeResources.com. Thanks for joining us, Bob, to talk about some of the things that we could be facing and how everyone should be preparing for some of these more common threats to our potential survival. In this hour, we have a first-time guest, and I'm really, really excited to have this gentleman on because I've heard so much about him. And Virginia Farver, who's been a frequent guest on this show over the past several years, first introduced me to the work that Daryl Hamamoto was doing. And Daryl's really fighting the courageous fight, and we're going to let him talk about that as well, too. But we're going to focus a lot on 5G. Daryl is a professor at UC Davis, teaches Asian studies, teaches different aspects of that course, including social problems, the sexualization, how he wants to see sexualization decline in the Asian portrayal in the media and in the public eye. And he really has a diverse background, very, very fascinating background. So without further ado, let's bring Daryl Hamamoto to the Common Sense Show. Daryl, thanks for joining us. We're really glad you could be with us tonight.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's great to be with you. And hello, friends and neighbors.
Well, Daryl, I had asked you this question just as we were ready to come on the air about it seems like when you're teaching Asian studies, your mind, and I know how the post-secondary thing works because I've done it for a long time, you kind of get locked in your own bubble. And I asked you this question, and I'm sure my listening audience will want to know the answer, too, and your answer made perfect sense. Tell the audience how you go from teaching Asian studies in a post-secondary institution to where you're concerned about 5G.
Dave, your question is quite pertinent. I teach Asian American studies, which is the history of people from the Asian continent that have settled through the United States. And bubble is a kind word for it. I would call it a ghetto. And it started out, and I've been teaching for 20 years at UC Davis alone. I've taught at UCLA, New York University, and other premier institutions across the country. But when the ethnic studies movement in general began over 40 years ago, it had a legitimate purpose within academia. But like a lot of other aspects of academia and scholarly inquiry, a lot of that has been infiltrated, has been hijacked, and as I've put it in previous programs or conversations, it has been weaponized and has been turned against the very people it purports to support and to defend. And I wrote an entire book on it. It's called Servitors of Empire, because in one of those crazy engineered ironies, we have any number of Asian American scientists and technologists, people who are in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, who are being used as what I called the latest iteration, what was once called Operation Paperclip. I call it, forgive my poor attempt at humor, I call it Operation Rice Paperclip, because you need intellectual labor in order to bring in the new technocratic order, the new world order, the infrastructure that covers the spectrum, not just 5G, which is horrible. It's execrable technology that's being imposed upon cities like Sacramento, where I live. It's being fast-tracked. It's kind of stalled for a moment, but these people are not going to give up. But 5G vaccinations, I've come out against one of these servitors of empire. That's the title of my book, one of these Asian American hod carriers for the globalists, and his name's Dr. Richard Pan. He's a colleague of mine. He's at least he was a faculty member at the University of California, Davis Medical School. But his big pharma sponsors, and they contribute heavily to his campaign funds, chest, his war chest, they induced him, or maybe they blackmailed him, I don't know, to represent the kindly Asian-American medical doctor face for Senate Bill 277, which mandated the mandatory mass vaccination of every single individual in the state of California. You cannot opt out anymore. This covers everybody. Of course, all those that are on the radar system, those who are illegal will probably be able to escape. But for the rest of us who are in the system, our fate is sealed in that regard. So I've been covering the entire array of technologies, and because I teach a new budding area of inquiry that I call New World Order Studies. But I study a wide range of technologies and activities, social engineering, behavioral control, mind control, if you will, and we're heavily invested in that at the University of California, as your listeners would know. And I brought that to my undergraduates, to the undergraduate students, because these are the professionals of the future. I think something like 75% of undergraduates, graduates of the University of California go to either professional school or graduate school. So these are the professionals who are going to be making public policy, who are going to be the medical doctors, who are going to be the attorneys of the very, very near future. And they are getting zero education so far as these technologies, these practices that I've described. And it's intentional. And it's the University of California itself and its Pentagon handlers and the other arms of the deep state that are dictating to Big Sister Janet Napolitano, a refugee from the Department of Homeland Security, who showed up mysteriously one day in the office of the presidency in Oakland, California, of the University of California. And yes, you heard it right. The University of California is an arm of the deep state. And I am I'm existing professionally, barely, in the belly of the beast.
Well, you mentioned, let's start with the last thing you said and kind of work backwards. You said you're surviving in the belly of the beast. I know exactly what you're talking about, but I'm not so sure that the average person in the audience who's not worked in post-secondary education is talking about. They're going to say, well, Daryl has nothing to worry about. He has academic freedom. Let's talk about that for a moment.
I've heard that so many times, Dave. Oh, you have tenure. You know, you can say anything. You can do anything you want. Oh, that is the front. That is the way that these people get away with it. Now, in addition to that, this is, and you know this very well, Dave, but this is something that you and your audience might know about. The reason that these people are so arrogant, including these low-level deans and department chairs and vice provosts of this, vice provost of that, is that they operate as a near-sovereign political entity. And this is what I discovered with my over 10-year battle with the University of California, Davis in specific. It's called administrative law. Now, if I may, I would like to recommend an excellent book. It's a chap book. It's very short. It's only $5.99. It's published by Encounter Books, and it's authored by a gentleman named Philip Hamburger, and the title is called The Administrative Threat. And it talks about how our government truly operates. And I'll quote very quickly. It says, administrative power is the pre-constitutional mode of governance, the sort of power that constitutions were most clearly expected to prevent. So administrative power, administrative law, has made a stealth reappearance through through art or society, not just in higher education, as in the case of the University of California. And this, I think, Dave, helps explain why, despite all the swamp-draining promises by our president, Donald Trump, is one of the reasons why very little has changed. And it'll probably be one of the reasons why very little will change unless we attack this anti-constitutional, unconstitutional encroachment that exists under this rubric of administrative law. The University of California has a, within the state of California constitution, has special status within it, and it was presented to the legislators and to the public as a means of ensuring academic freedom. And, of course, we know how these grandiloquent terms and concepts can be flipped on their heads and used against the very people, such as myself, who exercise academic freedom.
Well, I think that what you're seeing here is a juxtaposition of academic freedom, and it's called being a propaganda agent of the state. I don't know if you're seeing this at UC Davis, but here in Arizona, where I am, at the University of Arizona, they have hired social justice warriors to spy on fellow students and report back to an administrator who makes $170,000 a year. Do you have that kind of deep state activity on your campus?
Absolutely, and I'd almost guarantee that this program has been rolled out throughout the entire country in public and private institutions. In fact, my trial by fire, I've been put on administrative leave two out of the past 3 years, and I've been put through two different hearings, administrative hearings, by UC Davis high-powered lawyers. And I have some good news to report to your listeners in a moment. But I was put there by snitches, by student snitches, rats. And these individuals are taken off campus and on campus and trained by student services. Right, there's another good one for you, student services and counseling, because it's the psychotherapeutic mafia that are there to label people and to retrain them, re-educate them by these so-called leadership conferences. And they're nothing other than classic mind control exercises. And now, as you have pointed out, Dave, at the places like the University of Arizona, University of California, and elsewhere, there are administrators and complete wings within the university that are dedicated to this type of social and political and cultural control.
Yeah, I've talked to some former students who have left where I have taught them before, and they transferred to Arizona State University, and they took an environmental studies class just out of pure, you know, let's get an elective requirement out of the way. And they have told me, and I've heard this many, many times, you don't even speak about some of the pseudoscience, the cheating that was discovered in the emails from ClimateGate. You don't even bring that up, or you'll be flunked, and they'll even throw you out of the class. Do you have that kind of censorship going on at UC Davis in classes as well?
Absolutely. And the perps, or the perpetrators, and there are plenty of them on the UC Davis faculty alone, and they're all over through the system, and I assume they're all over because these their sponsors, their research sponsors are Big Pharma and Big Agra and all the usual suspects. These people are rewarded. They're kicked upstairs. These are people who have been discovered, found, red-handed, shilling for companies like Monster Santo. Monster Santo, or Monsanto, has a huge, an incredible, close relationship with the University of California, the agriculture department, the business department, so-called environmental sciences. All the social ills and the problems that are being supposedly manufactured, supposedly to protect us, are being supported and taught to undergraduates here at the university system. This is where it begins. And, of course, the less critical thinking individuals, the ones that want to just get a check off on their credits and get their degree, pick up and live their life, so to speak, they are going right into the jaws of the beast. And I believe it is my responsibility, it's my duty, it's my ethical responsibility as a human being, let alone as a professor, to warn the young people, the students, what they are signing up for. Now, the good news is there's plenty of alternatives that are available to them. Now, they do not have to go to work for Dow Chemical or for Monster Santo or for PepsiCo or one of the usual suspects in the corporatist takeover of the American Republic. Yeah, it's a rollout. It's a national rollout.
It is really, yeah. I hear what you're saying, but you know, if I were to create or wanted to create a totalitarian society based on a pseudo-philosophy and set of belief systems, I would start with the impressionable 18- and 19-year-olds. And these are the people who will make the most money in society. They'll have the supervisory and managerial jobs. And the people who aren't as well-educated and haven't received this indoctrination will still fall under their authority. That would be the sociological perspective I would apply to this. Do you think it's intentional? And was that Janet Napolitano's mission when she went from DHS to running California's university system?
I believe her function is to implement the policy. All what we're seeing being rolled out now has been workshopped for decades, and as you are no doubt aware, the process precedes university age population. It's K through 12 now. That's part of the hidden agenda and curriculum of so-called Common Core, correct? But she was brought in as an enforcer. She got recently, just past academic year, she got caught with her hand in the cookie jar. That is, she's keeping she and her, because she doesn't really know anything. She has controllers that are at the University of California headquarters in Oakland. She's a figurehead, just like at UC Davis, and all, you know, all the chancellors there are figureheads. They have what's called a associate chancellor, or what I call the shadow chancellor, who pulls the strings for these people. But anyway, she's there to implement this larger program to bring in the technocratic order. And people such as myself, who've been studying alternative literature all his life, even as a teenager, secret societies, you name it, none of this is really new to me, because I had young teenage friends who were fortunate enough to go to parochial schools, so they got to learn all this stuff, whereas in the public schools we didn't. This is the end game so far as higher education is concerned. The middle class population, the aspiring middle class population that was once the primary student body of the University of California, is being phased out in favor of Islamicists, number one, and illegal aliens. And I'm not talking about Latinos. I'm talking also about people from the Asian part of the world. Okay? So when I'm speaking here, it's doubly threatening because the University of California is not expecting an Asian American person to be blowing the whistle on his quote-unquote own people. But they're not my own people because they're anti-human. The only people who are my people are people who are pro-human. I don't care what ethnicity, race, or religion you are. If you are pro-human and if you're pro of human values, then you're part of my tribe. If you're not, such as Richard Pan, then you're on the other side. So this is, you know, you mentioned bubble, right? What the University of California, Davis, and my department in specific did not like is that I broke out of the bubble. I got out of the ethnic ghetto, all right? I found it was a trap. They just wanted me to sprout, anti-white this, anti-white patriarchy, anti-Christianity. This is what we want. This is part of the script that they do in sociology in the English department, so-called technocultural studies, the art department. Of course, the sciences we know about, but it's a comprehensive, full-spectrum curricular takeover that I single-handedly have been resisting.
Do you have any support with your colleagues? I was ready to ask another question, but what you just said took my breath away for a second. Are you operating in isolation is the better question?
No, I'm not. That's the good news, Dave. I'm not going to leave you or our good friends and neighbors who are listening on a low note. I'm just giving you the low lights, maybe I should launch into that. Right now, I had an outpouring of support, Dave, an outpouring. the dark secret that these propagandists are trying to keep from us is that we are in the vast majority. Not only are we in the vast majority, but we are winning the ideological war. It's just that, as your previous guests have mentioned, there has been such incredible pressure and sanction and shaming being imposed on undergraduates, on staff, and other professors. And they're just like any other people. They're protective of their jobs and what they mean to their families and their careers. But I have had an outpouring of support. There were petitions that were started for me by students such as Ms. Leslie Doe that hundreds of people signed. One of my great supporters, Kewling Valverde, who was put through the ringer, and these people play very, very dirty. They don't mind killing unborn children and alive individuals themselves. We had a environmental specialist who's a specialist on 5G, Lena Poo, who testified on my behalf at hearings that concluded back on April 21st of this academic year. And the good news I want to tell you is that after a month of waiting, on the very last day of the month, June 30th, this is how they do it. They make you wait to the very last moment. A committee of three peers, one was a gentleman, I won't give his name because I don't know if I'm supposed to reveal this, but one was a gentleman who is in the business department, the other person was in math, and the other person was a professor of physics. So we had three reasonable gentlemen who declared unanimously that I was free and clear of all the false accusations that the University of California and Vice Provost Maureen Mo Stanton had lodged against me with her co-conspirator, the Dean Susan Kaiser. Both these people, by the way, were rewarded, and they've gone back to the faculty. And my chair, starting with Richard Kim, previous to that, Nolan Zane, and before that, Wendy Ho. Now, I'm mentioning them on air because I'm going to see to it that there's going to be some accountability in these people fabricating these types of charges, trying to exhaust my resources, hurting me and my family and my friends and my supporters. It's a vicious campaign of trying to take me down. Now, last spring of the academic year 2016-2017, none other than Milo Yiannopoulos showed up at UC Davis. And this is before he showed up at UC Berkeley, which was the more publicized event. And the so-called students, and I say so-called because I think a lot of these people are outsiders, ran him out of town. So Milo got off easy. He got run out of UC Davis, but I've been put on administrative leave, not once, but twice. Academic year 2016-2017, and 2 years prior to that. And they still have not broken me. Now, I'm not out of the woods yet. We have a new chancellor coming in because of the disgraced, corrupt Linda Katehi, the person who called for the bear spray gassing of innocent protesters, which is their constitutional right, peaceful protesters. The shamed chancellor has been replaced by a new person, and he is going to be making the decision along with the shadow chancellor on what to do with one Professor Daryl Y. Hamamoto. So I'm still waiting for that. It's been almost a month since the Subcommittee on Privilege and Tenure gave me a clean bill of health and said that the university itself needs to re-examine its commitment to academic freedom, right? The chair chided the University of California, Davis, for putting me through this puppet show, this dumb show of what I call due process theater. And I went into this, Dave, pro se, that means without a lawyer. I had one 2 years ago, and I paid a huge sum of money in order to retain him. I call that my postgraduate continuing education. And with what I've learned there, I was able to apply in the hearings, two-day set of hearings. They're 8 hours apiece, and I faced off two highly compensated, and yeah, they did get played. They got played by me. Three highly compensated University of California attorneys. And with my quality witnesses and the support of the community, I was able to prevail. And, of course, with the agreement of three honest gentlemen, my peers on the faculty. I mention this because not everybody on the faculty is corrupt. I'm saying the majority of the corrupt are in our camp. It's just that they've been intimidated, they've been threatened, they've been fired, they've been persecuted, they've been harassed, they've been targeted, and of course they're not going to get any funding if they don't go along with the globalist New World Order technocratic agenda. So I applaud, I tip my hat to the three honest men who stood for justice, for academic freedom, and for our U.S. constitutional rights in this committee. So I say,
let me ask you a question about the allegations,
Darryl. Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay. Let's go back a little bit. And specifically, as you talk about these issues against the mandatory vaccinations, against the installation of 5G with proven health effects that are very negative, what was the objection that the university had with you saying these things?
Well, they said it didn't conform with my course syllabus. Now, fortunately, I have everything, all the I's dotted and T's crossed in my course syllabi. And I also have a disclaimer there and saying, if any aspect of this do you think is going to offend you, please opt out. Vote with your feet. Don't enroll in this course. That's fine. My courses are heavily enrolled. At least they used to be until the university systematically tried to empty me, my classes out. So I have all these disclaimers in there, and despite that, thanks to shows such as yours, independent media, and even social media, so-called, I've been able to address an even larger classroom, a larger audience. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it answers it perfectly, because, in other words, they were just basically saying what you're doing isn't conforming to what the students should have expected at the time they signed up because it doesn't conform to the syllabus. That's a real black and white issue.
Right.
Why do you need an 8-hour hearing to cover something that you could ascertain in 1 minute?
Well, it was 16 hours plus 30 days of waiting and continued waiting until I get the final verdict from the chancellor. Well, I had three rational individuals who no doubt have been witnessing the incredible turmoil that has been engineered by, I believe, by the University of California itself, has been engineered at higher levels than even the university, who are disgusted with this. And when they heard me speak to this, I think it resonated, and I don't know, I can't get in their heads, but I think what I was telling court stenographer and the people that were assembled in this little administrative room in floor five of Merrack Hall, which is the administration building, I think it resonated with them. They were just waiting for someone to say to these people, these individuals, these functionaries, saying, do you have you no decency where it comes to this matter? Does that resonate with you, Dave? They just needed some little ant say, hey, there's someone here on the faculty that knows what's up, who's done his research, who can document every single claim that he's making in and outside the classroom. And the reason they're doing this, the pretext of this material not conforming to the syllabus, I hope you know, is just a flimsy pretext to silence me, right, to deprive me of academic freedom.
Exactly.
Because the University of California, as I stated before, is an arm of the deep state. And the statements, the research that I was sharing with my students, these are journal, academic journal type research we're talking about, not something from the National Enquirer, although I enjoy reading that publication as well. They did not want me to share that with students because it goes counter to the agenda of the New World Order system, of which they're an integral part.
Well, no kidding. Let me ask you an opinion on something here. I spoke to the Oath Keepers up in Yavapai County here in Arizona yesterday, and I actually brought this subject up. I see the state universities, if you have a child like I do, raised in a Christian home, raised to question authority, to demand proof and facts, you know, I've taught research and stats, so I think I've trained my son well. And as you look at the choices today, I think the state universities are almost entirely compromised. Do you think it's any better at private institutions?
Well, the distinction between private and public is not clear, and it's probably, I'd go so far as to say it's a false distinction. The biggest difference is that the degree of secrecy that a corporation that runs Harvard or Yale or Stanford, it could be hidden a lot more stealthily. Not to say, and by the same token, the public institutions, as I've just alluded to in the case of Janet Napolitano, can also use stealth in hiding their budget and their real purpose. And there are multiple mm-hmm. purposes of the university that goes way beyond education. In fact, I'd go so far as to say that the education of undergraduates is largely, at least in the humanities and social sciences, because there's a lot of good work done in the other disciplines. It's just that those individuals don't really have the big picture. But I would say that as we've seen it today, as I speak, a lot of what we see, what passes for undergraduate education today, is merely window dressing. And the students are just sucker bait. They're a front. They're being used. They're being played. They should be outraged. Their parents should be outraged that their students, their children, their precious adult children, are being exploited in such a fashion. And as public institutions, however, they are accountable to us. And we need to hold their feet to the fire. And if we do that, I really think that we can rehabilitate these institutions of higher learning. They are still, I'm still committed to higher education. I'm still committed to the University of California. But we've had miscreants who've been promoted through the ranks. They've identified a bunch of low-level snitches and moved them through mid-level snitchery, and then they become the top rat, right? Such as Linda Katehi and her vice provost and her shadow chancellor and all the other minions that are there. These are horrible individuals. They are soulless. I've been in their rooms with them. I've sat almost knee-to-knee to them complaining and thinking that they were reasonable individuals. How wrong I was, because as soon as I left the room, they were trying to figure out ways how to screw Professor Hamamoto, and they haven't succeeded yet.
How many, you know, I'm thinking about the concept of double jeopardy. How many bites at the apple do they get at you?
Well, three times the charm. We're going to have to see. But you see, I have 1,400 pages of transcripts just from this hearing alone. And I also have the earlier set, right? If anything happens to me physically, if I disappear, if any sort of administrative action is taken against me, which is against my that goes against my well-being, let's say, or my professional standing, all that material is going to go public, all of it.
So this
all
sounds
the
like
confidential
a dead
material.
Man.
This is the dead man's switch. This is the Samson option, administrative Samson option. If they continue to screw me now. If they want to restore me and reinstate me and give me 10 years of back pay, by the way, I should say I haven't had a promotion or a raise in 8 years, because this is only the tail end of a multi-year harassment that I've endured. If they want to negotiate something reasonable, I'm willing to listen, because, Dave, my only goal is to get back into the classroom, get back on campus. I want everybody at the University of California, Davis, all the undergraduates, to have someone there who will listen to their views respectfully. People such as the Campus Republicans, the Young Republicans, you name it, the various Christian groups, religious organizations, they are in the majority, but they have been drowned out. They have been, in fact, it was the College Republicans that invited Milo Yiannopoulos to the University of California, Davis. Now, they were, I think, persuaded to back off on her. Maybe that was Berkeley. But I'm there. I'm a faculty person. I've been there for over 20 years. I want to make myself available to them anytime they like, so that their political views, their cultural expressions, are given as much exposure and free rein as the other groups that have, I think, have roots in the deep state funders. You know, the usual. People talk about George Soros, and he's one of many people, but we'll just use his Open Society Foundation as sort of a shorthand for a number of interconnected intelligence operations.
I know you've done a number of interviews like the one you're doing tonight. And has this also been thrown back in your face? Has this been one of the reasons they've used to come after you?
No, they won't state that because there are three areas that we are evaluated for: our scholarship, our teaching, and the other's public service. And the service that I'm rendering to the listeners of the Common Sense Show and other independent media, that is a public service. And it's been one of the pillars of strength in my battle against the University of California. So to attack me on those grounds would be a clear and patent violation of free speech and a violation of academic freedom. So they have to nibble at the edges, saying I'm, let's see, what are the terms being, I don't know, the various synonyms for politically incorrect, right? Creating a hostile workplace, I think is that's something that they use. And, of course, everything they throw at me, they're guilty of. They're the ones who initiated it. So I upped my game. People told me, hey, you really shouldn't go on the Alex Jones Show. You shouldn't go on this show or the other. I said, no, those are my people. This is my these are the good Americans that I represent in the classroom. I don't represent Monsanto or the Merck Corporation or the big corporate funders. I represent the people of the state of California and Americans, right? Like me, I'm a third generation American. I take that charge seriously. I took an oath when I joined the faculty at the University of California. Maybe there should be an Oath Keeper movement for academics, not just law enforcement. That would be a good start.
I just wonder, you said that we could reverse all this, but when we look at the rank and file, I was at a meeting several years ago when Arizona State University, I don't know why they invited me, I was at another institution, and I got this invitation, please come to our rollout of climate change program, graduate, undergraduate. And I'm sitting there, and they had a person, not even part of Arizona State, but part of the system that I was teaching in, speak up and say, I agree with you so much, we need to stop teaching American exemplarence. And I'm thinking, what? You need to stop teaching American exemplarence. And here's my point where I'm coming with a question. I'm wondering if the infestation of these kind of liberalized professors who aren't loyal to the Constitution, aren't loyal to the ideals of the Founding Fathers, has it gone so far that we can't root it out? The swamp is too deep in academia?
Well, that's always possible, and they want to create the perception there that they're a larger and bigger and more ferocious enemy than they really are. If they were able to, if they succeeded in silencing me or putting me out of action, or if I walked away worse voluntarily, then they would win by default. I'm going to remain there. I'm going to remain in place as an irritant, even if I'm the last man standing, even if I have zero support amongst the faculty. Now, I'm guessing, because I get calls, and this is why I know, from people who are on the left, who in the center, who identify themselves as conservative, and they all support me, and they're all in academia. So I know there is a groundswell of support there. All they need is one ant to stand up to the big bosses that are trying to bully us. So all these people who go to these conferences and say, yeah, we got to get rid of this curriculum or we're winning here, right? They are talking through their hat and they're talking big, right? We can defeat them by taking their own research from their own academic journal showing that so-called climate change is a fraud and how it's compromised. We can use their own journal articles showing the dangers of certain vaccinations. We can use their own academic journals showing the health hazards of Wi-Fi and more specifically 5G. We can use their own, and by the way, I use these as part of my exhibits to the three fine gentlemen who sat on the committee. I put that in my list of exhibits, you see. All that literature comes from their own academic journals. So the basic truth, the quest for truth, for honesty, for facts, for real science, and I respect science. I respect it. I'm not an anti-science person by any means, but I want real science, not fake science. I want pro-human science, not eugenics science. So you know, I think there is not great hope. I think we will prevail in this effort.
One of the things that really concerns me, Daryl, is I'm listening to you talk about these administrators who attempted to sit in judgment of your work, and you have to wonder, do they not have family members and children who are adversely affected by Wi-Fi and 5G and these damaging vaccines? I mean, do they think somehow they live in a bubble and they're unaffected by their political decisions?
Well, this is the way it works, and I'm verging into a really unseemly topic that repulses me, but recently we've been treated to this extravaganza, this fake controversy over so-called Pizzagate, right? And but we also know that in a larger sense there is elite pedophilia that takes place. But through that exposure, we find out how people can be made to do and engage in acts that are contrary to their own selves, to their own family members, to their own loved ones. Now, if you had high-level administrators who can be blackmailed, who can be could be shown to be pedophiles or be engaged in some sort of unseemly, if not illegal, activity such as prostitution or drug dealing or you name it, right? I mean, we just had a revelation at the University of Southern California. We call the University of Spoiled Children. We had the dean of the Keck Medical School. This is in the Los Angeles Times, who was shown to be a methamphetamine head. He was hiring prostitutes. He was getting paid something like $1.1 million a year as the dean of the medical school. He's not the only example. There's all kinds of freaks at the top level. They're easily blackmailable. So to answer your question, how could they act counter to their own interests and that those are their families? Well, they will if they want to save themselves from prison, or worse.
I guess what I'm wondering then is the correspondence of how do these people get moved up into these positions. I understand once you're there, you're compromised, but if you have people of an integrity that are there, you would think you'd have a fewer percentage of people that would be compromised.
No, the people with integrity are screened out very early on. They typically don't even get a job at the University of California. They get screened out at the graduate school level, at the admissions level. So, and all the way up through the ranks, including myself, by the way, you're invited to receptions, little parties, little get-togethers, and they're doing assessments all the way along. And they remark on, they meaning the informants, they have their ways of assessing whether you're a threat or not. Some time ago, I was deemed to be a threat because I'm a quote-unquote, as my current chair called me, a quote-unquote loose cannon. And then you're eliminated. And the people who have a higher level of sleaze and want to rise at all costs, those are the ones that are advanced. It's like any institution. And, of course, there are the usual after parties that they have, like in Hollywood. You know, the mansion parties, right, where all the illegal activity goes? Any institution you want to talk about operates on that same pyramidal structure. So I washed out of that a long time ago, and I've been observed since I was in high school. I was one of the first participants in the academic decathlon. Our supervisor, superintendent of schools, Dr. Robert Peterson, was the person who came up. I was in the very first one to represent my high school, Savannah High School, Anaheim, California. And you get started, you get invited to banquets and little events, and this is my advice to young people who are listening and their parents who are about ready to send their adult children off to college, university in August or in September, October. If you get invited to events and you don't know why you're there, what the purpose is, you're being scouted. You're being recruited. And I have all kind, and I lecture about this in my classes, by the way. And I had any number of undergraduates come to me later and say, yeah, this is how it went down for me. I was identified as part of a STEM program, and they want women in there. And they came to Chinatown, Oakland, and we had these weekly meetings offsite at a warehouse where they would tell us how to empower ourselves for ourselves and our community to help our families. So it's very, I don't know if you're familiar with the backstory with Dr. Mary's monkey, Judith Berry Baker, right?
Yes,
she was a winner of a national science fair competition. And she was identified when she was something like 15, 16 years old, right? That's a very typical process. And she was slated for greatness in the cancer industry. Unfortunately, she fell in love with the individual known as Lee Harvey Oswald. And fortunately, she kept quiet, and she lived to tell about it. She raised her family, and she speaks publicly on it. And a really good book by Ed Haslam, Dr. Mary's Monkey. I encourage all of you to read it. It's with my publisher, Trine Day of Walterville, Oregon, and the great editor there, Chris Milligan. That gives you a deep insight to how academia really works, especially in the research end. It hasn't changed much. It really started in earnest during World War II with Operation Paper, you know, and shortly after World War II. Yes, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I am very aware of the early identification process. And I have to tell you, I'm no stranger to what you're going through. Only mine was very covert and subtle, and I suspect that they've done this to you as well. I was a college basketball coach for 10 years, and I was pretty successful. And it would have been a real political move once I started doing this work to push me out. Plus, I would have had protection from ACLU and other organizations. And so they came to me and said, "You're doing such a wonderful job, but we need to change your job description a little bit and your hours, and we want to kind of move you into this." And that would have eliminated other income I had. That would have been pretty devastating to my family. So
sure.
I left coaching at that time. I'd been down your road, only I never sat through a hearing. They never told me what I did was wrong. They asked me how long I was going to continue to do it, because I started against Senator McCain when he and his partners were trying to steal my property, that of my neighbors, to put an international highway through without compensating us. And that's how I got started. And they said, "Well, how long are you going to let this go on?" And I said, "Until I win, until I feel we've turned the corner and reclaiming our lost liberties." And that's when they came back and said, "Well, we're going to change your responsibilities a little bit here." And they knew it was making it impossible for me to continue. And have they done that with your classes? Because I suspect that they could do that.
Oh, absolutely. They hired administrator to empty out all my classes. I had introductory lecture classes that would have 200 or more students. I was a very, very popular professor, not just in my department, but in the university in general. I still have a credible reputation. I spoke at UC Berkeley in November of this past year to a huge audience shortly before the staged events that followed Milo Yiannopoulos, who I have something to say about. He's a huge distraction, I believe. But anyway, yeah, they start nibbling at the edges. They play the margins. They never tell you overtly what you're doing wrong. And if you don't take the hint, then they progressively tighten the screws. So any of your listeners who identify, who recognize this pattern, this is the path that you are going, and start preparing now rather than later. Get out of the denial mode right quick and start preparing. Get your soldiers together, so to speak, and document everything. Keep all your papers together and get some support. Find other people that you can communicate with on this. This is how the administrators have been trained. They have seminars on how to get rid of malcontents like Coach Dave Hodges. It's a very familiar scenario.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I actually heard from one of the deans, and he's one of the VPs, and he contacted me. He said, "You should have fought this." Now, they weren't firing me. It was amazing, and they actually said they were going to increase my budget. And I said, "Okay, well, you've done such a wonderful job. We're gonna, you don't have to raise money for this anymore." And they said, "But you have to do this." And I think they knew that at my age, I wasn't willing to go down that road. I wasn't going to coach that much longer anyway, because I had a family that's growing up, and I was missing them. But the long story is having been through it, I know the enormous pressure this puts you under, because these people aren't constrained by the rule of law. When they go after
not
a professor, they have their administrative procedures they follow, and most of them are very unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm. Well, they play dirty.
Did you experience
too.
Things like hearsay evidence and nonsense like that?
Oh, absolutely. They hired a woman who bills herself as Muslim American, who was hired by Linda Cattei as a student representative. And she just brought all a bunch of hearsay evidence, and the three enlightened gentlemen from the business, mathematics, and physics department, they threw that out. They threw the document. This is laughable, they said. All right. Now, Dave, let me ask you a personal question, because they play dirty, right? I mean, they nibble at the edges and all that, and they try to give you these inducements like an expanded budget, and they hope that you'll take some of the money for yourself so they can bust you, right? But did you have any honey traps sent your way? Honey traps.
Yes, I think I did.
Okay.
I turned my back on these things so quickly. I never had an NCAA violation. You know, my program never came under scrutiny, and I didn't allow myself to get caught in those traps. But, yeah, there were some things that could have led to trouble. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And so we're talking about all kinds of tricks that that we need to be savvy on. I mean, we see them, we read about them, and we are in denial thinking that they'll ever happen to us. But you better best believe that if you offend people at the upper end of the power pyramid, in your case it was Senator, I guess he was Senator by that time, John McCain, you're offending deep state actors. And I must have really offended someone in the Pentagon or something.
You got Napolitano. I mean, that's as far as you need to go. Hey, we're just about out of time, and I want you, and we're going to have you back. This has been fascinating. But what I want you to do is tell people how they can follow your good work and any publications that you have.
Well, they could look at look me up at Facebook. I have public postings there, all kinds of interesting information, like the recent death of Chester Bennington, right? He was close to Chris Cornell. This is for your younger viewers. Both of these individuals committed suicide recently. Okay, and they supposedly had inside information on the national, international pedophile and isthmophilia ring. So they hit me there. They could look at my YouTube channel. It's called Professor Hamamoto. And I'll be coming up with some independent media projects as well. Music, documentaries, chats, and whatnot. But Facebook and YouTube for now are your best bets.
Well, that's very good. I hope that our listening audience does take advantage of that, because what they need to know is when they send their kids off to school, they need to monitor even more closely what's happening to their kids' belief systems. And I'm keeping my son closer to home. I'm not going to get into the details, but I want to make sure that you know, he's got a guiding voice in his ear, even though he's becoming an adult. And I know exactly where you're coming from on everything you said.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary for these parents to send their kids off and not knowing what kind of nonsense propaganda they're going to face. And I want to thank you for coming on and sharing, you know, what kids are in for. And next time I have you back, too, I want to talk a little bit about what you found with the dangers of 5G and how your students responded to it. So, Daryl, thanks so much for joining us. And I want to have you back before much time expires, because I feel like this has been an incomplete interview.
Well, thank you very much, Dave. It's been an honor and a privilege to speak with you and to all our friends and neighbors that listen to your show. It's a great show. I mean, we have really progressed thanks to individuals such as yourself, as a country, as a republic, as a free republic, and we're going to win back the republic. We have to. You're a coach, right? We have to have the winning attitude.
As a coach and a professor. Yeah, you're right. Well, look, we got to scoot. We're up against it.
All right.
Daryl, great job. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Everybody else, we'll see you back here next week with Mike Adams and Doug Hagman.